Overnights with Paul Ross. So, ding ding, all change at Wolves, and apparently Wolverhampton Wanderers are closing in on the appointment of the former Benfica manager to succeed Nuno Espirito Santo as their manager. No agreement has been reached yet with the Portuguese man, who's 45 years old, but he has phoned to England for talks with Wolves chairman Jeff Shee and technical director Scott Sellers. To find out more and to get a sense of how Portugal might do in the forthcoming Euros, delighted to welcome back to TalkSport and Talk Radio, Danny Pinto from the Seleção podcast, the host, in fact, of the Seleção podcast. Good morning, Danny. How are you doing, matey?
Paul, how are you, sir? Thanks for having me on.
Very well indeed. Now, can you give us a bit of a background to this? I think it's Bruno, is it Lager it's pronounced?
It's a Lage.
Lage. Give us some background, please, to him, because he's achieved quite a lot, I think, with Benfica. Didn't he win, he won the title with him, I think, back in 2019?
Yeah, he got successful real quick, real fast. If you guys remember back at the beginning of the last Premier League season, there were rumors of him perhaps taking over for Dean Smith at Aston Villa before support for Dean Smith, started varying up again. So, yeah, he took over for Rui Vitória in January of 2019 and just went on an unreal run at Benfica. He won 18 of 19 league matches, drew the other one, and overtook FC Porto for the league title. And then the following season, he just seemed to lose the locker room. In the 1920 season, had a big lead at the beginning part of that season. The team started falling apart. Locker room was lost. A lot of infighting between players and kind of like the technical team. And he was deemed by many in the media and many in Portugal as being a yes man to the president of Benfica, Luís Filipe Vieira. And then when the lead was lost in the league, and Porto was on their way to becoming champions, he was dismissed with about a handful of games to go. For me, it would be an odd hire, simply because considering where you're coming from as a Wolves fan, I mean, Nuno Espírito Santo is such a beloved figure in that, at that club.
Sure.
Taking them from promotion, to the Premier League in 17, then European football the following season in 2018. Not the season that they wanted this past season. Obviously, when you lose a player of Diogo Jota's caliber and then having Raul Jimenez being out from a majority of the season as well, they only mustered up 12 wins out of 38 matches. So I think he comes in, not that Nuno Espírito Santo is somebody who has big boots to fill, but in terms of a Premier League presence for Wolves in their recent history, Bruno Lage is potentially walking into something that he may not ultimately be ready for. And I find it to be an odd hire, to be quite honest.
If he were to take over, would it be a smooth transition as far as the way the team runs out goes? Or would he want to mix things up a bit, do we think? What's his style of play? What style of play does he favour?
Well, when he took over for Rui Vitória, the style of play, the attack was in a bit of a standstill that he inherited at Benfica. And you have to remember, this is right before João Félix, who is now at Atlético Madrid. Bruno Lage is the one that called up João Félix to the team. And that's when he started blossoming for Benfica. You had him, you had Haris Seferovic, who had a career season under Bruno Lage. You had Jonas, who had his last season with Bruno Lage there. The attack, once he came on, he ran the majority of a 4-4-1-1. The attack skyrocketed and was the top of the league for that winning season. It sputtered a little bit in the second season. That's going to happen when Felix leaves and Jonas is no longer there. But he will get the attack going. Hopefully, as the aforementioned Raul Jimenez, he gets back healthy and ready to go for Wolves. And with Pedro Neto also going down at the end of this past season, hopefully he recovers soon and is a focal point of the attack for not only Wolves but for Portugal whenever he does get back in, because we're definitely going to miss him this summer in the Euros.
And Sam Stevens and I, top producer, were discussing the kind of almost symbiotic relationship between Jorge Mendes and Wolves. What do you make of that? Seems an odd kind of arrangement, an odd setup there. It seems like they can only really hire his clients.
You know what? It pays to be the number one agent in all of football, doesn't it, fellas?
Yeah.
I mean, when he can call the shots and pretty much dictate where players go. And, you know, the project itself, from someone who has a Portuguese background, it's been fascinating to see ever since 2017 when that Wolves project began in earnest, to see them promote, to see them have so many players, at Wolves that are Portuguese or even played in the Portuguese league, like Raul Jimenez. So, you know, Jorge Mendes is not someone who makes decisions lightly, and when he wants something to happen, usually it does.
And we've also got great news. I wonder if it's made much headlines over in Portugal. Man City's Ruben Dias, Portuguese, of course, has been named the Football Writers Association Men's Football Player, Footballer of the Year, of course, and probably quite right too. He was signed to City, I think, from Benfica for, what, £65 million or thereabouts?
Yeah, he was just phenomenal for Man City this year. He started off as one of the focal points of Jorge Jesus's reasons why he came to back to Benfica. But when they fell out of Champions League play, the writing was on the wall that Ruben Dias was going to have to be sold after the money that they spent at Benfica this summer. But just what a season for Ruben Dias, winning the FWA's Player of the Year, the only the third player, I believe, to win in his first season, joining Klinsmann and Zola, and the first defender since Steve Nicol to win in. That was in 89,
beating Harry Kane, beating Kevin De Bruyne. Do you think he's got the maturity, certainly got the talent, but the maturity to kind of galvanize Portugal's defense in the Euros?
I absolutely do. I think the day that Cristiano Ronaldo retires from international play, I would put the armband right on his arm right away. I think he has the temperament, he's very stoic in the way that he plays, in my opinion. I actually had some reservations when he left Benfica to Manchester City, because City has this amazing ability to buy players in the same position that they bought a player in the previous year or 2 years before at just astronomical numbers. You had Laporte, you had Stones, you had Ake, and I was actually a little apprehensive of his signing there, not because I didn't think he would be a success there, but I think there'd be a bit of a logjam once he got there. But from day one, he established himself as Pep's number one option at center back. He won the Player of the Month in November, about a month after being there. And with City giving up the least amount of goals in the league, I think there's a huge credit to Ruben Dias that needs to be given there. And I think he's in the conversation now as one of the best, if not the best, center back in the world right now. I really do.
Now, this isn't meant to be a patronizing question. My memory goes back long enough to remember Portuguese superstar Eusebio back into the 60s, early 70s. And we've had so many remarkable players at the moment in the Premier League. Silva, Fernandes, we mentioned Ruben Dias. What is going on in Portugal that produces, for a relatively small country, such immense talent, do you think? What are you doing so right?
See, if I told you that, then everybody else would start doing it. And that's,
but it is,
and that's
remarkable. Just, it is remarkable, isn't it? There's something, maybe there's something in the water. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. I just think that there, this is not to disparage any other country or anything, but there is just there's a love and a technical side to football that, that the Portuguese, and I would say maybe just right now, are enjoying. I honestly can't put my finger on it specifically, but I mean, Sporting coming off of their championship season, but they have been historically one of the best academies in the world the last 20, 30 years. Benfica turns out great players. Porto puts out great players as well. You know, these big leagues, England, Germany, Spain, they're not silly to think that they can get some quality players from the feeder system that is a Portuguese league.
And is there any sense in which maybe the move against, or the perceived move against physicality in the Premier League is benefiting the kind of quality of Portuguese players?
You know, I think it's something that, especially in the Portuguese league, it is a bit of a physical league, but not near the physicality that the Premier League is. And I think in terms of, I think it's only benefited the national side, considering the number of players that are playing trade in England. I think that the physical side of Portuguese football, especially on the national side, had taken a hit, or just wasn't up to par with other national teams in the past few years. But I would say ever since big moves to England for a lot of these players, especially those right now currently on this national team, I think that the physicality has benefited the team. And having a manager like Fernando Santos, who is not flashy, he likes to get the result. That's what he's getting paid to do. I think the physicality that the Premier League gives to these Portuguese players has definitely benefited not only them in the league, but as a national team as well.
Now, you're in Group F in the Euros, where Portugal are. You've got Hungary, France and Germany. Hungary first. What are your thoughts overall, Danny, on how Portugal might fare? That's a tough group, is it not?
Oh, I think 3-for-3. No big deal. I think, you know, Hungary, Germany, France, what's the harm there? I mean, you have the two most recent world champions, plus you have Hungary who gets to play. I mean, they just made the tournament via the playoffs. And how are they rewarded? They're rewarded by having a home matchup. And I think maybe more than one in the group. They had a great 3-3 draw, in 2016 with Portugal, in their group play. So they're very familiar. I think Portugal has a tremendous shot, and should be considered one of the favorites to win and not only win, but repeat as European champions. I think the squad is undoubtedly more talented than the one that brought Portugal's first trophy in 2016. You didn't have Bruno Fernandes, you didn't have Diogo Jota, you didn't have Bernardo Silva in the attack in 2016. You have Ruben Dias now in the back as well. But I will say this, Paul, I think that to be in the group of death and to having to deal with Germany and France in your second and third match, and then to open up in Hungary, in Budapest against Hungary, it's a tall order. And historically, Portugal hasn't really fared well when they are perceived as favorites. They are definitely an underdog type nation. You know, you look at coming off of the Euro Championship, they only made it to the round of 16, were knocked out by Uruguay in the World Cup. And then in 2012, when they made the semifinals and lost out to Spain in penalties, they didn't get out of the group in 2014 in Brazil. So, as favorites, it's uncharted territory for the most part, especially as defending champions. That is definitely uncharted territory for this national team. And then there's the question of Cristiano Ronaldo. It's like, how much does he have left and how much will he be asked to carry given the amount of talent that is now surrounding him compared to 5 years ago when they won the championship in 2016.
Danny, an absolute pleasure, mate. You must come back and talk to us again very soon indeed from the Seleção podcast. You can get that from most good podcast providers. Seleção spelled S-E-L-E-C-A-O. And that was Danny Pinto talking to me, Paul Ross, and you guys on Talk Sport and Talk Radio.